Chapter 34. Continued.
"Whoever's nearest the receiver, dial 62442, he said. Ron did it, his arm bent bizarrely to reach the dial. As it whirred back into place, the cool female voice sounded inside the box.
"Welcome to the Ministry of Magic. Please state your name and business."
"Harry Potter, Ron Weasley, Hermione Granger," Harry said very quickly. "Ginny Weasley, Neville Longbottom, Luna Lovegood. We're here to save someone, unless your ministry can do it first."
"Thank you," said the cool female voice. "Visitors, please take the badges and attach them to the front of your robes."
Half a dozen badges slid out of the metal chute where returned coins normally appeared. Hermione scooped them up and handed them mutely to Harry over Ginny's head. He glanced at the topmost one. "Harry Potter, Rescue Mission."
"Visitors to the Ministry, you are required to submit to a search and present your wands for registration at the security desk, which is located at the far end of the atrium."
"Fine," Harry said loudly as his scar gave another throb. "Now can we move?" The floor of the telephone box shuddered, and the pavement rose up past its glass windows. The scavenging thestrals were sliding out of sight. Blackness closed over their heads, and with a dull grinding noise they sank down into the depths of the Ministry of Magic. A chink of soft golden light hit their feet and, widening, rose up their bodies. Harry bent his knees and held his wand as ready as he could in such cramped conditions as he peered through the glass to see whether anybody was waiting for them in the atrium, but it seemed to be completely empty. The light was dimmer than it had been by day. There were no fires burning under the mantelpieces set into the walls, but as the lift slid smoothly to a halt, he saw that golden symbols continued to twist sinuously in the dark blue ceiling.
"The Ministry of Magic wishes you a pleasant evening," said the woman's voice.
The door of the telephone box burst open. Harry toppled out of it, followed by Neville and Luna. The only sound in the atrium was the steady rush of water from the golden fountain, where jets from the wands of the witch and wizard, the point of the centaur's arrow, the tip of the goblin's hat, and the house elf's ears continued to gush into the surrounding pool. "Come on," said Harry quietly, and the six of them sprinted off down the hall, Harry in the lead, past the fountain, towards the desk where the watch wizard who had weighed Harry's wand had sat, and which was now deserted. Harry felt sure there ought to be a security person there, sure their absence was an ominous sign, and his feeling of foreboding increased as they passed through the golden gates to the lifts. He pressed the nearest down button, and a lift clattered into sight almost immediately. The golden grills slid apart with a great echoing clanking, and they dashed inside. Harry stabbed the number 9 button. The grills closed with a bang, and the lift began to descend, jangling and rattling. Harry had not realized how noisy the lifts were on the day he had come with Mr. Weasley. He was sure the din would raise every security person within the building. Yet when the lift halted, the cool female voice said,
"Department of Mysteries,"
and the grills slid open. They stepped out into the corridor, where nothing was moving but the nearest torches flickering in the rush of air from the lift. Harry turned towards the plain black door. After months and months of dreaming about it, he was here at last.
"Let's go,"
he whispered, and he led the way down the corridor, Luna right behind him, gazing around with her mouth slightly open.
"Okay, listen,"
said Harry, stopping again within 6 feet of the door.
Maybe a couple of people should stay here as a lookout, and—"
"And how are we going to let you know something's coming?"
asked Ginny, her eyebrows raised.
"You could be miles away."
"We're coming with you, Harry," said Neville.
"Let's get on with it," said Ron firmly.
Harry still did not want to take them all with him, but it seemed he had no choice. he turned to face the door and walked forwards. Just as it had in his dream, it swung open, and he marched forwards, leading the others over the threshold. They were standing in a large, circular room. Everything in here was black, including the floor and ceiling. Identical, unmarked, handleless black doors were set at intervals all around the black walls, interspersed with branches of candles whose flames burned blue. Their cool, shimmering light, reflected in the shining marble floor, made it look as though there was dark water underfoot. "Someone shut the door," Harry muttered. He regretted giving this order the moment Neville had obeyed it. Without the long chink of light from the torch-lit corridor behind them, the place became so dark that for a moment the only things they could see were the bunches of shivering blue flames on the walls and their ghostly reflections in the floor. In his dream, Harry had always walked purposefully across this room to the door immediately opposite the entrance and walked on. But there were around a dozen doors here. Just as he was gazing ahead at the doors opposite him, trying to decide which was the right one, there was a great rumbling noise, and the candles began to move sideways. The circular wall was rotating. Hermione grabbed Harry's arm, as though frightened the floor might move too, but it did not. For a few seconds, the blue flames around them were blurred to resemble neon lines as the wall sped around. Then, quite as suddenly as it had started, the rumbling stopped, and everything became stationary once again. Harry's eyes had blue streaks burned into them. It was all he could see. "What was that about?" whispered Ron fearfully.
"I think it was to stop us knowing which door we came in through," said Ginny in a hushed voice.
Harry realized at once she was right. He could no sooner identify the exit door than locate an ant on the jet-black floor, and the door through which they needed to proceed could be any one of the dozen surrounding them.
"How are we going to get back out?" said Neville uncomfortably.
"Well, that doesn't matter now," said Harry forcefully, blinking to try to erase the blue lines from his vision and clutching his wand tighter than ever. "We won't need to get out till we've found Sirius."
"Don't go calling for him, though," Hermione said urgently.
But Harry had never needed her advice less. His instinct was to keep as quiet as possible.
"Where do we go, then, Harry?" Ron asked.
"I don't—"
Harry began. He swallowed.
"In the dreams, I went through the door at the end of the corridor from the lifts into a dark room—that's this one—and then I went through another door into a room that kind of glitters."
"We should try a few doors," he said hastily. "I'll know the right way when I see it. Come on!"
He marched straight at the door now facing him, the others following close behind him, set his left hand against its cool, shining surface, raised his wand ready to strike the moment it opened, and pushed. It swung open easily. After the darkness of the first room, the lamps hanging low on golden chains from this ceiling gave the impression that this long, rectangular room was much brighter, though there were no glittering, shimmering lights as Harry had seen in his dreams. The place was quite empty, except for a few desks, and in the very middle of the room an enormous glass tank of deep green liquid, big enough for all of them to swim in. A number of pearly white objects were drifting around lazily in it.
"What are those things?" whispered Ron.
"Dunno,"
said Harry.
"Are they fish?"
breathed Ginny.
"Aquavirius maggots," said Luna excitedly. "Dad said the Ministry were breeding—"
"No," said Hermione. She sounded odd. She moved forward to look through the side of the tank.
"They're brains."
"Brains?"
"Yes. I wonder what they're doing with them."
Harry joined her at the tank. Sure enough, there could be no mistake now he saw them at close quarters. Glimmering eerily, they drifted in and out of sight in the depths of the green liquid, looking something like slimy cauliflowers.
"Let's get out of here," said Harry.
This isn't right. We need to try another door.
There are doors here, too, said Ron, pointing around the walls. Harry's heart sank. How big was this place?
In my dream, I went through that dark room into the second one, he said. I think we should go back and try from there.
So they hurried back into the dark circular room. The ghostly shapes of the brains were now swimming before Harry's eyes, instead of the blue candle flames.
Wait, said Hermione sharply, as Luna made to close the door of the brain room behind them. Flagrate!
She drew with her hand in mid-air, and a fiery X appeared on the door. No sooner had the door clicked shut behind them than there was a great rumbling, and once again the wall began to revolve very fast. But now there was a great red-gold blur in amongst the faint blue, and, when all became still again, the fiery cross still burned, showing the door they had already tried.
"Good thinking," said Harry. "Okay, let's try this one."
Again he strode directly at the door facing him and pushed it open, his wand still raised, the others at his heels. This room was larger than the last, dimly lit and rectangular, and the centre of it was sunken, forming a great stone pit some 20 feet deep. They were standing on the topmost tier of what seemed to be stone benches running all around the room and descending in steep steps like an amphitheatre, or the courtroom in which Harry had been tried by the Wizengamot. Instead of a chained chair, however, there was a raised stone dais in the centre of the pit, on which stood a stone archway that looked so ancient, cracked and crumbling, that Harry was amazed the thing was still standing. Unsupported by any surrounding wall, the archway was hung with a tattered black curtain or veil, which, despite the complete stillness of the cold surrounding air, was fluttering very slightly, as though it had just been touched.
"Who's there?" said Harry, jumping down onto the bench below.
There was no answering voice, but the veil continued to flutter and sway.
"Careful!"
whispered Hermione. Harry scrambled down the benches one by one until he reached the stone bottom of the sunken pit. His footsteps echoed loudly as he walked slowly towards the dais. The pointed archway looked much taller from where he now stood than it had when he'd been looking down on it from above. Still the veil swayed gently, as though somebody had just passed through it.
"Sirius?"
Harry spoke again, but more quietly now that he was nearer. He had the strangest feeling that there was someone standing right behind the veil on the other side of the archway. Gripping his wand very tightly, he edged around the dais. But there was nobody there. All that could be seen was the other side of the tattered black veil.
"Let's go!" called Hermione from halfway up the stone steps. "This isn't right, Harry. Come on, let's go!"
She sounded scared, much more scared than she had in the room where the brains swam. Yet Harry thought the archway had a kind of beauty about it, old though it was. The gently rippling veil intrigued him. He felt a very strong inclination to climb up on the dais and walk through it.
"Harry, let's go, okay?" said Hermione more forcefully.
"Okay," he said, but did not move. He had just heard something. There were faint, whispering, murmuring noises coming from the other side of the veil.
"What are you saying?"
he said very loudly, so that his words echoed all around the stone benches.
"Nobody's talking, Harry,"
said Hermione, now moving over to him.
"Someone's whispering behind there,"
he said, moving out of her reach and continuing to frown at the veil.
"Is that you, Ron?"
"I'm here, mate,"
said Ron, appearing around the side of the archway.
"Can't anyone else hear it?"
Harry demanded, for the whispering and murmuring was becoming louder. Without really meaning to put it there, he found his foot was on the dais.
"I can hear them too," breathed Luna,
joining them around the side of the archway and gazing at the swaying veil.
There are people in there.
What do you mean, in there? Demanded Hermione, jumping down from the bottom step and sounding much angrier than the occasion warranted.
There isn't any in there. It's just an archway. There's no room for anybody to be there. Harry, stop it. Come away.
She grabbed his arm and pulled, but he resisted.
Harry, we are supposed to be here for Sirius, she said in a high-pitched, strained voice.
Sirius, Harry repeated, still gazing, mesmerized at the continuously swaying veil.
Yeah.
Something finally slid back into place in his brain.
Sirius. Captured, bound, and tortured, and he was staring at this archway.
He took several paces back from the dais and wrenched his eyes from the veil.
"Let's go," he said.
"That's what I've been trying to..."
"Well, come on, then," said Hermione, and she led the way back around the dais.
On the other side, Ginny and Neville were staring, apparently entranced, at the veil too. Without speaking, Hermione took hold of Ginny's arm, Ron grabbed Neville's, and they marched them firmly back to the lowest stone bench and clambered all the way back up to the door.
"What do you reckon that arch was?"
Harry asked Hermione as they regained the dark circular room.
"I don't know, but whatever it was dangerous," she said firmly, again inscribing a fiery cross on the door.
Once more the walls span and became still again. Harry approached another door at random and pushed. It did not move.
"What's wrong?" said Hermione.
"It's locked," said Harry, throwing his weight at the door, but it didn't budge.
"This is it, then, isn't it?" said Ron excitedly, joining Harry in the attempt to force the door open. "Bound to be!"
"Get out of the way," said Hermione sharply.
She pointed her wand at the place where a lock would have been on an ordinary door, and said, "Alohomora!" Nothing happened.
"Sirius's knife," said Harry.
He pulled it out from inside his robes and slid it into the crack between the door and the wall. The others all watched eagerly as he ran it from top to bottom, withdrew it, and then flung his shoulder again at the door. It remained as firmly shut as ever. What was more, when Harry looked down at the knife, he saw the blade had melted.
"Right, we're leaving that room," said Hermione decisively.
"But what if that's the one?" said Ron, staring at it with a mixture of apprehension and longing.
"It can't be. Harry could get through all the doors in his dream," said Hermione,
marking the door with another fiery cross as Harry replaced the now useless handle of Sirius's knife in his pocket.
"You know what could be in there," said Luna eagerly
as the wall started to spin yet again.
"Something blibbering, no doubt,"
said Hermione under her breath, and Neville gave a nervous little laugh. The wall slid to a halt, and Harry, with a feeling of increasing desperation, pushed the next door open.
"This is it!"
He knew it at once by the beautiful, dancing, diamond-sparkling light. As Harry's eyes became accustomed to the brilliant glare, he saw clocks gleaming from every surface, large and small, grandfather and carriage, hanging in spaces between the bookcases or standing on desks ranging the length of the room, so that a busy, relentless ticking filled the place like thousands of minuscule marching footsteps. The source of the dancing, diamond-bright light was a towering crystal bell jar that stood at the far end of the room.
"This way!"
Harry's heart was pumping frantically now that he knew they were on the right track. He led the way down the narrow space between the lines of desks, heading, as he had done in his dream, for the source of the light, the crystal bell jar quite as tall as he was, that stood on a desk and appeared to be full of a billowing, glittering wind.
"Oh, look!"
said Ginny as they drew nearer, pointing at the very heart of the bell jar. Drifting along in the sparkling current inside was a tiny, jewel-bright egg. As it rose in the jar, it cracked open, and a hummingbird emerged, which was carried to the very top of the jar. But as it fell on the draught,
its feathers became bedraggled and damp again, and by the time it had been borne back to the bottom of the jar, it had been enclosed once more in its egg.
"Keep going," said Harry sharply, because Ginny showed signs of wanting to stop and watch the egg's progress back into a bird.
"You dawdled enough by that old arch," she said crossly, but followed him past the bell jar to the only door behind it.
"This is it," Harry said again, and his heart was now pumping so hard and fast he felt it must interfere with his speech. "It's through here."
He glanced around at them all. They had their wands out and looked suddenly serious and anxious. He looked back at the door and pushed. It swung open. They were there. They had found the place. High as a church and full of nothing but towering shelves covered in small, dusty glass orbs. They glimmered dully in the light issuing from more candle brackets set at intervals along the shelves. Like those in the circular room behind them, their flames were burning blue. The room was very cold. Harry edged forward and peered down one of the shadowy aisles between two rows of shelves. He could not hear anything or see the slightest sign of movement.
"You said it was row 97, whispered Hermione.
"Yeah," breathed Harry, looking up at the end of the closest row. Beneath the branch of blue glowing candles protruding from it glimmered the silver figure 53.
"We need to go right, I think," whispered Hermione, squinting to the next row. "Yes, that's 54.
"Keep your wands ready," Harry said softly. They crept forward, glancing behind them as they went on down the long alleys of shelves, the further ends of which were in near total darkness. Tiny, yellowing labels had been stuck beneath each glass orb on the shelves. Some of them had a weird, liquid glow. Others were as dull and dark within as blown light bulbs. They passed row 84, 85. Harry was listening hard for the slightest sound of movement. But Sirius might be gagged now, or else unconscious. Or, said an unbidden voice inside his head, he might already be dead.
"I'd have felt it," he told himself,
his heart now hammering against his Adam's apple.
"I'd already know." 97, whispered Hermione.
They stood grouped around the end of the row, gazing down the alley beside it. There was nobody there.
"He's right down at the end," said Harry,
whose mouth had become slightly dry.
"You can't see properly from here."
And he led them between the towering rows of glass balls, some of which glowed softly as they passed.
"He should be near here," whispered Harry, convinced that every step was going to bring the ragged form of Sirius into view on the darkened floor. "Anywhere here. Really close."
"Harry,"
said Hermione tentatively, but he did not want to respond. His mouth was very dry.
"Somewhere about here," he said.
They had reached the end of the row and emerged into more dim candlelight. There was nobody there. All was echoing, dusty silence.
"He might be,"
Harry whispered hoarsely, peering down the next alley.
"Or maybe..."
He hurried to look down the one beyond that.
"Harry,"
said Hermione again.
"What?"
he snarled.
I don't think Sirius is here."
Nobody spoke. Harry did not want to look at any of them. He felt sick. He did not understand why Sirius was not here. He had to be here. This was where he, Harry, had seen him. He ran up the space at the end of the rows, staring down them. Empty aisle after empty aisle flickered past. He ran the other way, back past his staring companions. There was no sign of Sirius anywhere, nor any hint of a struggle.
"Harry," Ron called. "What?"
He did not want to hear what Ron had to say, did not want to hear Ron tell him he'd been stupid or suggest that they ought to go back to Hogwarts. But the heat was rising in his face, and he felt as though he would like to skulk down here in the darkness for a long while before facing the brightness of the atrium above and the others' accusing stares.
"Have you seen this?" said Ron.
"What?" said Harry, but eagerly this time. It had to be a sign that Sirius had been there, a clue. He strode back to where they were all standing, a little way down row 97, but found nothing except Ron staring at one of the dusty glass spheres on the shelf.
"What?"
Harry repeated glumly.
"It's got your name on," said Ron.
Harry moved a little closer. Ron was pointing at one of the small glass spheres that glowed with a dull inner light, though it was very dusty and appeared not to have been touched for many years.
"My name?" said Harry blankly.
He stepped forwards. Not as tall as Ron, he had to crane his neck to read the yellowish label affixed to the shelf right beneath the dusty glass ball. In spidery writing was written a date of some 16 years previously, and below that, SPT to APWBD, Dark Lord and Harry Potter. Harry stared at it.
"What is it?"
Ron asked, sounding unnerved.
"What's your name doing down here?"
He glanced along the other labels on that stretch of shelf.
"I'm not here," he said, sounding perplexed. "None of the rest of us are here."
"Harry, I don't think you should touch it," said Hermione sharply, as he stretched out his hand.
"Why not?" he said. "It's something to do with me, isn't it?"
"Don't, Harry," said Neville suddenly. Harry looked at him. Neville's round face was shining slightly with sweat. He looked as though he could not take much more suspense.
"It's got my name on," said Harry.
And feeling slightly reckless, he closed his fingers around the dusty ball's surface. He had expected it to feel cold, but it did not. On the contrary, it felt as though it had been lying in the sun for hours, as though the glow of light within was warming it. Expecting, even hoping, that something dramatic was going to happen, something exciting that might make their long and dangerous journey worthwhile after all, Harry lifted the glass ball down from its shelf and stared at it. Nothing whatsoever happened. The others moved in closer around Harry, gazing at the orb as he brushed it free of the clogging dust. And then, from right behind them, a drawling voice spoke.
"Very good, Potter. Now turn around, nice and slowly, and give that to me."
Chapter 35 Beyond the Veil. Black shapes were emerging out of thin air all around them, blocking their way left and right. Eyes glinted through slits in hoods. A dozen lit wand tips were pointing directly at their hearts. Ginny gave a gasp of horror.
"To me, Potter," repeated the drawling voice of Lucius Malfoy as he held out his hand, palm up.
Harry's insides plummeted sickeningly. They were trapped and outnumbered 2-1.
"To me," said Malfoy yet again.
"Where's Sirius?" Harry said.
Several of the Death Eaters laughed. A harsh female voice from the midst of the shadowy figures to Harry's left said triumphantly,
"The Dark Lord always knows."
"Always," echoed Malfoy softly.
"Now, give me the prophecy, Potter."
"I want to know where Sirius is."
"I want to know where Sirius is,"
mimicked the woman to his left. She and her fellow Death Eaters had closed in, so that they were mere feet away from Harry and the others, the light from their wands dazzling Harry's eyes.
"You've got him!" said Harry, ignoring the rising panic in his chest, the dread he had been fighting since they had first entered the 97th row. "He's here! I know he is!"
"The little baby woke up frightened and thought what it dreamed was true,"
said the woman in a horrible mock-baby voice. Harry felt Ron stir beside him.
"Don't do anything," Harry muttered. "Not yet."
The woman who had mimicked him let out a raucous scream of laughter.
"You hear him? You hear him? Giving instructions to the other children as though he thinks of fighting us?"
"Oh, you don't know Potter as I do, Bellatrix," said Malfoy softly. "He has a great weakness for heroics. The Dark Lord understands this about him.
Now give me the prophecy, Potter."
"I know Sirius is here," said Harry, though panic was causing his chest to constrict, and he felt as though he could not breathe properly. "I know you've got him!"
More of the Death Eaters laughed, though the woman laughed loudest of all. "It's time you learned the difference between life and dreams, Potter," said Malfoy. "Now give me the prophecy, or we start using wands."
"Go on, then," said Harry, raising his own wand to chest height.
As he did so, the five wands of Ron, Hermione, Neville, Ginny, and Luna rose on either side of him. The knot in Harry's stomach tightened. If Sirius really was not here, he had led his friends to their deaths for no reason at all. But the Death Eaters did not strike. "Hand over the prophecy, and no one need get hurt," said Malfoy coolly. It was Harry's turn to laugh.
"Yeah, right," he said. "I give you this prophecy, is it? And you'll just let us skip off home, will you?"
The words were hardly out of his mouth when the female Death Eater shrieked,
"Axio prof!"
Harry was just ready for her. He shouted, "Protego!" before she had finished her spell, and though the glass sphere slipped to the tips of his fingers, he managed to cling on to it.
"Oh, he knows how to play, little bitty baby Potter," she said, her mad eyes staring through the slits in her hood. "Very well, then. I told you no!"
Lucius Malfoy roared at the woman.
"If you smash it!"
Harry's mind was racing. The Death Eaters wanted this dusty, spun-glass sphere. He had no interest in it. He just wanted to get them all out of this alive, to make sure none of his friends paid a terrible price for his stupidity. The woman stepped forward, away from her fellows, and pulled off her hood. Azkaban had hollowed Bellatrix Lestrange's face, making it gaunt and skull-like, but it was alive with a feverish, fanatical glow.
"You need more persuasion?" she said, her chest rising and falling rapidly. "Very well. Take the smallest one,"
she ordered the Death Eaters beside her.
"Let him watch while we torture the little girl. I'll do it."
Harry felt the others close in around Ginny. He stepped sideways so that he was right in front of her, the prophecy held up to his chest.
"You'll have to smash this if you want to attack any of us," he told Bellatrix.
"I don't think your boss will be too pleased if you come back without it, will he?"
She did not move. She merely stared at him, the tip of her tongue moistening her thin mouth.
"So," said Harry, "what kind of prophecy are we talking about, anyway?"
He could not think what to do but to keep talking. Neville's arm was pressed against his, and he could feel him shaking. He could feel one of the others' quickened breath on the back of his head. He was hoping they were all thinking hard about ways to get out of this, because his mind was blank.
"What kind of prophecy?"
repeated Bellatrix, the grin fading from her face.
"You jest, Harry Potter."
"Nope, not jesting," said Harry, his eyes flicking from Death Eater to Death Eater, looking for a weak link, a space through which they could escape.
"How come Voldemort wants it?"
Several of the Death Eaters let out low hisses.
"You dare speak his name?"
whispered Bellatrix.
"Yeah," said Harry, maintaining his tight grip on the glass ball, expecting another attempt to bewitch it from him. "Yeah, I've got no problem with saying Vol—"
"Shut your mouth!" Bellatrix shrieked. "You dare speak his name with your unworthy lips! You dare besmirch it with your half-blood's tongue! You dare—"
"Did you know he's a half-blood, too?" said Harry recklessly.
Hermione gave a little moan in his ear.
"Voldemort? Yeah, his mother was a witch, but his dad was a muggle. Or has he been telling you lot he's pure blood?"
"Stupid!"
"No!"
A jet of red light had shot from the end of Bellatrix Lestrange's wand, but Malfoy had deflected it. His spell caused hers to hit the shelf a foot to the left of Harry, and several of the glass orbs there shattered. Two figures, pearly white as ghosts, fluid as smoke, unfurled themselves from the fragments of broken glass upon the floor, and each began to speak. Their voices vied with each other, so that only fragments of what they were saying could be heard over Malfoy and Bellatrix's shouts.
"At the solstice will come anew," said the figure of an old bearded man.
"Do not attack! We need the prophecy!"
"He dared! He dares!"
shrieked Bellatrix incoherently.
"He stands there, filthy half-blood!" "Wait until we've got the prophecy!"
bawled Malfoy.
"And none will come after," said the figure of a young woman.
The two figures that had burst from the shattered spheres had melted into thin air. Nothing remained of them or their erstwhile homes but fragments of glass upon the floor. They had, however, given Harry an idea. The problem was going to be conveying it to the others.
"You haven't told me what's so special about this prophecy I'm supposed to be handing over," he said, playing for time.
He moved his foot slowly sideways, feeling around for someone else's.
"Do not play games with us, Potter," said Malfoy.
"I'm not playing games," said Harry, half his mind on the conversation, half on his wandering foot. And then he found someone's toes and pressed down upon them. A sharp intake of breath behind him told him they were Hermione's.
"What?"
she whispered.
"Dumbledore never told you the reason you bear that scar was hidden in the bowels of the Department of Mysteries?"
Malfoy sneered.
"What?"
said Harry, and for a moment he quite forgot his plan.
"What about my scar?"
"What?"
whispered Hermione more urgently behind him.
"Can this be?" said Malfoy, sounding maliciously delighted.
Some of the Death Eaters were laughing again, and under cover of their laughter, Harry hissed to Hermione, moving his lips as little as possible,
"Smash shelves." "Dumbledore never told you," Malfoy repeated.
"Well, this explains why you didn't come earlier, Potter. The Dark Lord wondered why—"
"When I say now,
you didn't come running when he showed you the place where it was hidden in your dreams. He thought natural curiosity would make you want to hear the exact wording."
"Did he?"
said Harry. Behind him, he felt rather than heard Hermione passing his message to the others, and he sought to keep talking to distract the Death Eaters.
"So he wanted me to come and get it, did he? Why?"
"Why?" Malfoy sounded incredulously delighted.
"Because the only people who are permitted to retrieve a prophecy from the Department of Mysteries, Potter, are those about whom it was made, as the Dark Lord discovered when he attempted to use others to steal it for him."
"And why did he want to steal a prophecy about me?"
"About both of you, Potter. About both of you." Haven't you ever wondered why the Dark Lord tried to kill you as a baby?
Harry stared into the slitted eye-holes through which Malfoy's grey eyes were gleaming. Was this prophecy the reason Harry's parents had died? The reason he carried his lightning bolt scar? Was the answer to all of this clutched in his hand?
"Someone made a prophecy about Voldemort and me," he said quietly, gazing at Lucius Malfoy, his fingers tightening over the warm glass sphere in his hand. It was hardly larger than a snitch, and still gritty with dust. "And he's made me come and get it for him. Why couldn't he come and get it himself?"
"Get it himself?" shrieked Bellatrix over a cackle of mad laughter. "The Dark Lord walk into the Ministry of Magic when they are so sweetly ignoring his return? The Dark Lord reveal himself to the Aurors when at the moment they are wasting their time on my dear cousin?"
"So he's got you doing his dirty work for him, has he?" said Harry. "Like he tried to get Sturgis to steal it, and Bode."
"Very good, Potter, very good," said Malfoy slowly. "But the Dark Lord knows you are not unintelligent—"
"Now!"
yelled Harry. 5 different voices behind him bellowed,
"Reducto!"
5 curses flew in 5 different directions, and the shelves opposite them exploded as they hit. The towering structure swayed as 100 glass spheres burst apart. Pearly white figures unfurled into the air and floated there, their voices echoing from who knew what long dead past amid the torrent of crashing glass and splintered wood now raining down upon the floor.
"Run!"
Harry yelled as the shelves swayed precariously and more glass spheres began to fall from above. He seized a handful of Hermione's robes and dragged her forwards, holding one arm over his head as chunks of shelf and shards of glass thundered down upon them. A Death Eater lunged forwards through the cloud of dust, and Harry elbowed him hard in the masked face. They were all yelling. There were cries of pain and thunderous crashes as the shelves collapsed upon themselves, weirdly echoing fragments of the seers unleashed from their spheres. Harry found the way ahead clear and saw Ron, Ginny and Luna sprint past him, their arms over their heads. Something heavy struck him on the side of the face, but he merely ducked his head and sprinted onwards. A hand caught him by the shoulder. He heard Hermione shout, "Stupefy!" The hand released him at once. They were at the end of row 97. Harry turned right and began to sprint in earnest. He could hear footsteps right behind him and Hermione's voice urging Neville on. Straight ahead, the door through which they had come was ajar. Harry could see the glittering light of the bell jar. He pelted through the doorway, the prophecy still clutched tight and safe in his hand, and waited for the others to hurtle over the threshold before slamming the door behind them.
"Colloportus!" gasped Hermione,
and the door sealed itself with an odd, squelching noise.
"Where are the others?"
gasped Harry. He had thought Ron, Luna, and Ginny were ahead of them, that they would be waiting in this room, but there was nobody there.
"They must have gone the wrong way,"
whispered Hermione, terror in her face.
"Listen,"
whispered Neville. Footsteps and shouts echoed from behind the door they had just sealed. Harry put his ear close to the door to listen, and heard Lucius Malfoy roar,
"Leave not! Leave him, I say! His injuries will be nothing to the Dark Lord compared to losing that prophecy. Jugson, come back here! We need to organize. We'll split into pairs and search. And don't forget, be gentle with Potter until we've got the prophecy. You can kill the others if necessary. Bellatrix, Rodolphus, you take the left. Crabbe, Rabastan, go right. Jugson, Dolohoff, the door straight ahead. McNair and Avery, through here. Rookwood, over there. Mulciber, come with me."
"What do we do?" Hermione asked Harry, trembling from head to foot. "Well, we don't stand here waiting for them to find us for a start," said Harry. "Let's get away from this door." They ran, as quietly as they could, past the shimmering bell jar where the tiny egg was hatching and unhatching, towards the exit into the circular hallway at the far end of the room. They were almost there
when Harry heard something large and heavy collide with the door Hermione had charmed shut.
"Stand aside," said a rough voice. "Alohomora!"
As the door flew open, Harry, Hermione, and Neville dived under desks. They could see the bottom of the two Death Eaters' robes drawing nearer, their feet moving rapidly.
"They might have run straight through to the hall," said the rough voice.
"Check under the desks," said another.
Harry saw the knees of the Death Eaters bend. Poking his wand out from under the desk, he shouted, "Stupefy!" A jet of red light hit the nearest Death Eater. He fell backwards into a grandfather clock and knocked it over. The second Death Eater, however, had leapt aside to avoid Harry's spell and was pointing his own wand at Hermione, who was crawling out from under the desk to get a better aim.
"Avada!"
Harry launched himself across the floor and grabbed the Death Eater around the knees, causing him to topple and his aim to go awry. Neville overturned a desk in his anxiety to help, and pointing his wand wildly at the struggling pair, he cried, "Expelliarmus!" Both Harry's and the Death Eater's wands flew out of their hands and soared back towards the entrance to the Hall of Prophecy. Both scrambled to their feet and charged after them, the Death Eater in front, Harry hot on his heels, and Neville bringing up the rear, plainly horror-struck by what he had done.
"Get out of the way, Harry!"
yelled Neville, clearly determined to repair the damage. Harry flung himself sideways as Neville took aim again and shouted,
"Stupefy!"
The jet of red light flew right over the Death Eater's shoulder and hit a glass-fronted cabinet on the wall full of variously shaped hourglasses. The cabinet fell to the floor and burst apart, glass flying everywhere, sprang back up onto the wall, fully mended, then fell down again and shattered. The Death Eater had snatched up his wand, which lay on the floor beside the glittering bell jar. Harry ducked down behind another desk as the man turned. His mask had slipped so that he couldn't see. He ripped it off with his free hand and shouted,
"Stupefy!"
screamed Hermione, who had just caught up with them. The jet of red light hit the Death Eater in the middle of his chest. He froze, his arm still raised, his wand fell to the floor with a clatter, and he collapsed backwards towards the bell jar. Harry expected to hear a clunk for the man to hit solid glass and slide off the jar onto the floor. But instead, his head sank through the surface of the bell jar as though it were nothing but a soap bubble, and he came to rest, sprawled on his back on the table, with his head lying inside the jar full of glittering wind.
"Axio wand!" cried Hermione.
Harry's wand flew from a dark corner into her hand, and she threw it to him.
"Thanks," he said.
"Right, let's get out of..."
"Look out!"
said Neville, horrified. He was staring at the Death Eater's head in the bell jar. All three of them raised their wands again, but none of them struck. They were all gazing open-mouthed, appalled at what was happening to the man's head. It was shrinking very fast, growing balder and balder, the black hair and stubble retracting into his skull, his cheeks becoming smooth, his skull round and covered with a peach-like fuzz. A baby's head now sat grotesquely on top of the thick, muscled neck of the Death Eater as he struggled to get up again. But even as they watched, their mouths open, the head began to swell to its previous proportions again. Thick black hair was sprouting from the pate and chin.
"It's time," said Hermione in an awestruck voice. "Time."
The Death Eater shook his ugly head again, trying to clear it. But before he could pull himself together, it began to shrink back to babyhood once more. There was a shout from a room nearby, then a crash and a scream.
"Ron!"
Harry yelled, turning quickly from the monstrous transformation taking place before them.
"Ginny! Luna! Harry!"
Hermione screamed. The Death Eater had pulled his head out of the bell jar. His appearance was utterly bizarre, his tiny baby's head bawling loudly, while his thick arms flailed dangerously in all directions, narrowly missing Harry, who had ducked. Harry raised his wand, but to his amazement, Hermione seized his arm.
"You can't hurt a baby."
There was no time to argue the point. Harry could hear more footsteps growing louder from the Hall of Prophecy, and knew, too late, that he ought not to have shouted and given away their position. "Come on," he said, and leaving the ugly, baby-headed Death Eater staggering behind them, they took off for the door that stood open at the other end of the room, leading back into the black hallway. They had run halfway towards it when Harry saw, through the open door, two more Death Eaters running across the black room towards them. Veering left, he burst instead into a small, dark, cluttered office and slammed the door behind them. "Colo," began Hermione, but before she could complete the spell, the door had burst open and the two Death Eaters had come hurtling inside. With a cry of triumph, both yelled, "Impedimenta!" Harry, Hermione, and Neville were all knocked backwards off their feet. Neville was thrown over the desk and disappeared from view. Hermione smashed into a bookcase and was promptly deluged in a cascade of heavy books. The back of Harry's head slammed into the stone wall behind him. Tiny lights burst in front of his eyes, and for a moment he was too dizzy and bewildered to react. "We've got him," yelled the Death Eater nearest Harry.
"In an office off Silencio," cried Hermione,
and the man's voice was extinguished. He continued to mouth through the hole in his mask, but no sound came out. He was thrust aside by his fellow Death Eater.
"Petrificus Totalus!"
shouted Harry as the second Death Eater raised his wand. His arms and legs snapped together, and he fell forwards, face down onto the rug at Harry's feet, stiff as a board and unable to move.
"Well done, Harry!"
But the Death Eater Hermione had just struck dumb made a sudden slashing movement with his wand. A streak of what looked like purple flame passed right across Hermione's chest. She gave a tiny, "Oh!" as though of surprise, and crumpled onto the floor where she lay motionless.
"Hermione!"
Harry fell to his knees beside her as Neville crawled rapidly towards her from under the desk, his wand held up in front of him. The Death Eater kicked out hard at Neville's head as he emerged. His foot broke Neville's wand in two and connected with his face. Neville gave a howl of pain and recoiled, clutching his mouth and nose. Harry twisted around, his own wand held high, and saw that the Death Eater had ripped off his mask and was pointing his wand directly at Harry, who recognized the long, pale, twisted face from the Daily Prophet. Antonin Dolohoff, the wizard who had murdered the Pruitts. Dolohoff grinned. With his free hand, he pointed from the prophecy, still clutched in Harry's hand, to himself, then at Hermione. Though he could no longer speak, his meaning could not have been clearer. "Give me the prophecy, or you get the same as her."
"Like you won't kill us anyway the moment I hand it over," said Harry.
A whine of panic inside his head was preventing him thinking properly. He had one hand on Hermione's shoulder, which was still warm, yet did not dare look at her properly. "Don't let her be dead. Don't let her be dead. It's my fault if she's dead."
"Whatever you do, Harry,"
said Neville fiercely from under the desk, lowering his hands to show a clearly broken nose and blood pouring down his mouth and chin.
"Don't give it to him."
Then there was a crash outside the door, and Dolohoff looked over his shoulder. The baby-headed Death Eater had appeared in the doorway, his head bawling, his great fists still flailing uncontrollably at everything around him. Harry seized his chance.
"Petrificus Totalus!"
The spell hit Dolohoff before he could block it, and he toppled forwards across his comrade, both of them rigid as boards and unable to move an inch.
"Hermione,"
Harry said at once, shaking her as the baby-headed Death Eater blundered out of sight again.
"Hermione, wake up!" "What did he do to her?"
said Neville, crawling out from under the desk to kneel at her other side, blood streaming from his rapidly swelling nose.
"I dunno."
Neville groped for Hermione's wrist.
"That's a pulse, Harry. I'm sure it is."
Such a powerful wave of relief swept through Harry that for a moment he felt light-headed.
She's alive?
Yeah, I think so.
There was a pause, in which Harry listened hard for the sound of more footsteps. But all he could hear were the whimpers and blunderings of the baby-headed Death Eater in the next room.
"Neville, we're not far from the exit," Harry whispered. "We're right next to that circular room. If we can just get you across it and find the right door before any more Death Eaters come, I'll bet you can get Hermione up the corridor and into the lift. Then you could find someone, raise the alarm."
"And what are you going to do?"
said Neville, mopping his bleeding nose with his sleeve and frowning at Harry.
"I've got to find the others," said Harry.
"Well, I'm going to find them with you," said Neville firmly.
"But Hermione!"
"We'll take her with us,"
said Neville firmly.
"I'll carry her.
You're better at fighting than I am."
He stood up and seized one of Hermione's arms, glaring at Harry, who hesitated, then grabbed the other and helped hoist Hermione's limp form over Neville's shoulders.
"Wait,"
said Harry, snatching up Hermione's wand from the floor and shoving it into Neville's hand.
"You'd better take this."
Neville kicked aside the broken fragments of his own wand as they walked slowly towards the door.
"My grad's going to kill me,"
said Neville thickly, blood spattering from his nose as he spoke.
"That was my dad's old wand."
Harry stuck his head out of the door and looked around cautiously. The baby-headed Death Eater was screaming and banging into things, toppling grandfather clocks and overturning desks, bawling and confused, while the glass-fronted cabinet that Harry now suspected had contained time-turners continued to fall, shatter, and repair itself on the wall behind them.
"He's never going to notice us," he whispered. "Come on, keep close behind me."
They crept out of the office and back towards the door into the black hallway, which now seemed completely deserted. They walked a few steps forwards, Neville tottering slightly due to Hermione's weight. The door of the time room swung shut behind them, and the walls began to rotate once more. The recent blow on the back of Harry's head seemed to have unsteadied him. He narrowed his eyes, swaying slightly, until the walls stopped moving again. With a sinking heart, Harry saw that Hermione's fiery crosses had faded from the doors.
"So which way do you re—"
But before they could make a decision as to which way to try, a door to their right sprang open and three people fell out of it.
"Ron!"
croaked Harry, dashing towards them.
"Ginny, are you all—"
"Harry!"
said Ron, giggling weakly, lurching forwards, seizing the front of Harry's robes and gazing at him with unfocused eyes.
"There you are. You look funny, Harry. You're all messed up."
Ron's face was very white, and something dark was trickling from the corner of his mouth. Next moment, his knees had given way, but he still clutched the front of Harry's robes, so that Harry was pulled into a kind of bow.
"Ginny," Harry said fearfully, "what happened?"
But Ginny shook her head and slid down the wall into a sitting position, panting and holding her ankle.
"I think her ankle's broken. I heard something crack," whispered Luna, who was bending over her and who alone seemed to be unhurt. "Four of them chased us into a dark room full of planets. It was a very odd place. Some of the time we were just floating in the dark."
"Harry, we saw Uranus up close,"
said Ron, still giggling feebly.
"Get it, Harry? We saw Uranus."
A bubble of blood grew at the corner of Ron's mouth and burst.
"Anyway, one of them grabbed Ginny's foot. I used the reductor curse and blew up Pluto in his face, but—"
Luna gestured hopelessly at Ginny, who was breathing in a very shallow way, her eyes still closed.
"And what about Ron?"
said Harry fearfully, as Ron continued to giggle, still hanging off the front of Harry's robes.
"I don't know what they hit him with," said Luna sadly, "but he's got a bit funny. I could hardly get him along at all."
"Harry,"
said Ron, pulling Harry's ear down to his mouth and still giggling weakly.
"You know who this girl is, Harry? She's loony. Loony Lovegood.
We've got to get out of here, said Harry firmly. Luna, can you help Ginny?
Yes,
said Luna, sticking her wand behind her ear for safekeeping, then putting an arm around Ginny's waist and pulling her up.
It's only my ankle. I can do it myself,
said Ginny impatiently. But next moment she had collapsed sideways and grabbed Luna for support. Harry pulled Ron's arm over his shoulder, just as, so many months ago, he had pulled Dudley's. He looked around. They had a 1 in 12 chance of getting the exit right first time. He heaved Ron towards a door. They were within a few feet of it when another door across the hall burst open, and 3 Death Eaters sped in, led by Bellatrix Lestrange.
"There they are!"
she shrieked. Stunning spells shot across the room. Harry smashed his way through the door ahead, flung Ron unceremoniously from him, and ducked back to help Neville in with Hermione. They were all over the threshold, just in time to slam the door against Bellatrix.
"Colliportus!"
shouted Harry, and he heard 3 bodies slam into the door on the other side.
"It doesn't matter," said a man's voice. "There are other ways in. We've got them. They're here."
Harry span around. They were back in the brain room, and sure enough, there were doors all around the walls. He could hear footsteps in the hall behind them as more Death Eaters came running to join the first.
"Luna, Neville, help me!"
The 3 of them tore around the room, sealing the doors as they went. Harry crashed into a table and rolled over the top of it in his haste to reach the next door.
"Colliportus!"
There were footsteps running along behind the doors. Every now and then another heavy body would launch itself against one, so it creaked and shuddered. Luna and Neville were bewitching the doors along the opposite wall. Then, as Harry reached the very top of the room, he heard Luna cry, "Colla!
Ah!"
He turned in time to see her flying through the air. 5 Death Eaters were surging into the room through the door she had not reached in time. Luna hit a desk, slid over its surface and onto the floor on the other side, where she lay sprawled, as still as Hermione.
"Get Potter!"
shrieked Bellatrix, and she ran at him. He dodged her and sprinted back up the room. He was safe as long as they thought they might hit the prophecy.
"Hey!"
said Ron, who had staggered to his feet and was now tottering drunkenly towards Harry, giggling.
"Hey, Harry, there are brains in here. Is that weird, Harry?"
"Ron, get out of the way, get down." But Ron had already pointed his wand at the tank.
"Honest, Harry, they're brains. Look, Axio brain."
The scene seemed momentarily frozen. Harry, Ginny and Neville and each of the Death Eaters turned, in spite of themselves, to watch the top of the tank as a brain burst from the green liquid like a leaping fish. For a moment it seemed suspended in mid-air. Then it soared towards Ron, spinning as it came, and what looked like ribbons of moving images flew from it, unravelling like rolls of film.
"Harry, look at it!"
said Ron, watching it disgorge its gaudy innards.
"Harry, come and touch it. Bet it's weird."
"Ron, no!"
Harry did not know what would happen if Ron touched the tentacles of thought now flying behind the brain, but he was sure it would not be anything good. He darted forwards, but Ron had already caught the brain in his outstretched hands. The moment they made contact with his skin, the tentacles began wrapping themselves around Ron's arms like ropes.
"Harry, look what's happened. No, no, I don't like it. No, stop, stop!"
But the thin ribbons were spinning around Ron's chest now. He tugged and tore at them as the brain was pulled tight against him like an octopus's body.
"Defindo!"
yelled Harry, trying to sever the feelers wrapping themselves tightly around Ron before his eyes, but they would not break. Ron fell over, still thrashing against his bonds.
"Harry, it'll suffocate him!"
screamed Ginny, immobilized by her broken ankle on the floor.
Then a jet of red light flew from one of the Death Eater's wands and hit her squarely in the face. She keeled over sideways and lay there unconscious.
"Stupefy!"
shouted Neville, wheeling around and waving Hermione's wand at the oncoming Death Eaters.
"Stupefy! Stupefy!"
But nothing happened. One of the Death Eaters shot their own stunning spell at Neville. It missed him by inches. Harry and Neville were now the only two left fighting the five Death Eaters, two of whom sent off streams of silver light like arrows, which missed but left craters in the wall behind them. Harry ran for it as Bellatrix Lestrange raced right at him. Holding the prophecy high above his head, he sprinted back up the room. All he could think of doing was to draw the Death Eaters away from the others. It seemed to have worked. They streaked after him, knocking chairs and tables flying, but not daring to bewitch him in case they hurt the prophecy. And he dashed through the only door still open, the one through which the Death Eaters themselves had come, inwardly praying that Neville would stay with Ron and find some way of releasing him. He ran a few feet into the new room and felt the floor vanish. He was falling down steep stone step after steep stone step, bouncing on every tier, until at last, with a crash that knocked all the breath out of his body, he landed flat on his back in the sunken pit where the stone archway stood on its dais. The whole room was ringing with the Death Eaters' laughter. He looked up and saw the five who had been in the brain room descending towards him, while as many more emerged through other doorways and began leaping from bench to bench towards him. Harry got to his feet, though his legs were trembling so badly they barely supported him. The prophecy was still miraculously unbroken in his left hand, his wand clutched tightly in his right. He backed away, looking around, trying to keep all the Death Eaters within his sight. The back of his legs hit something solid. He had reached the dais where the archway stood. He climbed backwards onto it. The Death Eaters all halted, gazing at him. Some were panting as hard as he was. One was bleeding badly. Dolohov, freed of the body-bind curse, was leering, his wand pointing straight at Harry's face.
"Potter, your race is run," drawled Lucius Malfoy, pulling off his mask. "Now hand me the prophecy like a good boy."
"Let the others go, and I'll give it to you," said Harry desperately.
A few of the Death Eaters laughed.
"You're not in a position to bargain, Potter," said Lucius Malfoy, his pale face flushed with pleasure. "You see, there are 10 of us, and only one of you. Or hasn't Dumbledore ever taught you how to count?"
"He's Dot alone," shouted a voice from above them. "He's still got B."
Harry's heart sank. Neville was scrambling down the stone benches towards them, Hermione's wand held fast in his trembling hand.
"Neville, no, go back to Ron!"
"Stupefy!"
Neville shouted again, pointing his wand at each Death Eater in turn. "Stupefy! Stupid!"
One of the largest Death Eaters seized Neville from behind, pinioning his arms to his sides. He struggled and kicked. Several of the Death Eaters laughed.
"It's Longbottom, isn't it?" sneered Lucius Malfoy. "Well, your grandmother is used to losing family members to our cause. Your death will not come as a great shock."
"Longbottom?"
repeated Bellatrix, and a truly evil smile lit her gaunt face.
"Why, I have had the pleasure of meeting your parents, boy."
"I know you have!" roared Neville, and he fought so hard against his captor's encircling grip that the Death Eater shouted, "Someone stun him!"
"No, no, no!" said Bellatrix.
She looked transported, alive with excitement, as she glanced at Harry, then back at Neville.
"No, let's see how long Longbottom lasts before he cracks like his parents. Unless Potter wants to give us the prophecy."
"Don't give it to them!" roared Neville, who seemed beside himself, kicking and writhing, as Bellatrix drew nearer to him and his captor, her wand raised. "Don't give it to them, Harry!" Bellatrix raised her wand.
"Crucio!"
Neville screamed, his legs drawn up to his chest, so that the Death Eater holding him was momentarily holding him off the ground. The Death Eater dropped him, and he fell to the floor, twitching and screaming in agony.
"That was just a taster," said Bellatrix,
raising her wand so that Neville's screams stopped, and he lay sobbing at her feet. She turned and gazed up at Harry.
"Now, Potter, either give us the prophecy, or watch your little friend die the hard way."